The floor is yours, Harry.
So I'm an addict. My name is Harry. And first things first, I need to say I'm grateful that I'm clean today, and I'm grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I told Miley I'll try to talk slow so I'm understood. When I was listening to you guys talk earlier, it reminds me of German almost. I've been to Germany a couple of times, and I went to the Oktoberfest, you know, in my act of addiction. And it reminds me of German. Is it that's Danish? Is that what you're speaking? Yes. All right. So, you know, I'm grateful to be in a meeting in another country. That's amazing. You know, Zoom has made it possible for us to all connect. You know, something positive came out of the pandemic. You know, we all found ourselves on Zoom meetings, and at first I didn't want to be on a Zoom meeting. I wanted to just be at my home group, you know, the face-to-face meetings. But I've gotten used to Zoom, and I've actually, you know, established a lot of new friendships, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm looking forward to meeting you guys. I hope you guys can come to America and come visit me at my home group. And if I find myself in Denmark, I'll come, you know, to your home group. So, I'm going to start where I always start, and that's the beginning. You know, I truly believe I was an addict before I ever used drugs. You know, some people believe they became an addict because of drugs. Some people believe they became an addict because of maybe their parents. You know, it was, you know, passed down through their genes. And some people believe, like I do, that it came from my behaviors. It really doesn't matter. It says it in our basic text. It doesn't matter, you know, how we became an addict. You know, we're not responsible for our addiction, but we are responsible for our recovery. So I learned that being here. So my story begins when you know, I found my first drug of choice. And my first drug of choice was not a substance that I could ingest or shoot up or smoke. My first drug of choice was fantasy. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Fantasy was my first way to escape from reality, was fantasy. I like being up here in my head too much. I like it too much. So who knows what underoos are? Underoos are underwear that you wear under your clothes, but they had superheroes on them. When I was a kid, I used to wear underoos. And you're supposed to wear your underwear under your clothes, but not me. I wore my underoos on top of my clothes because I wanted everybody to see that I was Aquaman. I loved Aquaman. I liked to swim. So that was my superhero. And I had a bunch of co-signers as kids. I had co-signers that would, you know, co-sign my insanity, and they would wear their underoos on top of their clothes also. So my friend Steve, he was the strongest one. You know, he could kick our ass any day. Superman. He wore Superman underoos. And my friend Hector, he was the fastest guy. He could run faster than anybody, so he was Flash. His outfit was all red. And I liked being Aquaman because I could be in my head and I could make up stuff in my head, and I could make up any scenario, and I could make up any situation, and I could overcome it. And I was powerful. I was powerful in my head, and I liked that. There was no reality in my head. There was no responsibilities in my head. It was just fantasy. And I like that. That's my first drug of choice. I used fantasy to escape from reality. I didn't like reality. I was a kid. My mom made me go to school. My mom made me clean my room. I had to take out the garbage. I had to wash the dishes. I didn't like responsibilities. I liked being in my head in fantasy. So that's when I believe I became an addict. That was way before any kind of substance that you could smoke, shoot up, or drink. You know, this was way before that. And that's how I decided to live my life. I liked fantasy more than reality. And you know, I could talk about all the different types of way I escape from reality. I could use books. I could read a book and I could escape from reality. I could listen to music and I can escape from reality. I could, you know, watch TV. I could watch a movie and escape from reality. There are so many ways that I found myself running away from responsibilities and reality. And it made my life unmanageable. It made me a bad kid because I wasn't following the rules. I was making up my own rules because in fantasy, I could do that. I'm laying down right now because I hurt my leg. And next year in January, I have an operation for a knee replacement. So I got to stay laying down and it's hard for me to get around. So I'm going to make the best of it trying to lay down and talk. So are you guys understanding me? Okay, good. So I made a decision to quit school. And I dropped out of high school. And my mother said to me, "Oh, so you're man enough to make those decisions." She says, "Well, then you're also man enough to pay rent." And my mom made me pay rent to live at the house because I quit school. So, you know, I still wasn't using any substances. I was just, I was clean. I wasn't on no dope. I wasn't on any drugs. I was just going through life my way. And I got to tell you a story. I have a nickname. They call me the gorilla in New York. Well, now I'm living in North Carolina. I got clean in New York, and now I'm living in North Carolina. And I used to ride a motorcycle with a gang, and they called me the gorilla. And then when I got clean, my home group called me the gorilla because when I hug you, my hairy arms, and I hold you like a gorilla. So when I hug you, you know you've been hugged. I don't give a one-handed hug. Fuck that. I give two hands and I pull you in, and that's the kind of hug I give. And it might be a little creepy for some of the women, but fuck that. I hug because my sponsor taught me how to hug. So my whole life, this gorilla thing has been part of me. Because when I was a kid, I was riding a skateboard and I was in a park. And my friends were on this bench. It was one guy and it was like five girls. And they were all kissing him. They were all kissing him. And they tried to get me to go on the bench. And I was like, hell no, I didn't want no girls or nothing when I was a kid. I was a late bloomer. I was still a virgin at 16 years old. And I still haven't gotten high yet. So I'm still a kid. And they tried to get me on the bench. And I was like, I almost hit a girl with my skateboard. That's how terrified I was of being around a girl. So you got to listen to this because this is the disease of addiction as I understand it. There was another girl sitting by herself on another bench. And she said, "Who would want to kiss you anyway? You look like an ugly monkey." So I'm talking about the disease of addiction. I have five girls that want to kiss me. And I have one girl that does not want to kiss me and calls me an ugly monkey. How do you think I started to perceive myself in life? I listen to the negative. I always focus on the negative. She had one thing bad to say. And that's how I believed that's how I looked. I don't remember the five girls who want to kiss me. I remember the one girl who calls me an ugly monkey. And my whole life, that monkey and that gorilla theme has been part of me. So I just went with it. You know, I am known as the gorilla. And I'm not an ugly monkey anymore. I know I'm not an ugly monkey. I'm a handsome silverback gorilla, and I'm proud of that. And I'm going to keep coming back. So I finally find myself using a substance. And my friends took me to a bar. And once again, there was this girl looking at me, and I did not want no part of that. And my friends gave me a drink. And I took the drink and I drank it, and something happened. My chest popped out, and I took another drink, and then my head popped up. I was able to look the girls right in the eyes, you know? So my chest pops out, my head pops up. Well, both of my heads popped up. The other one did too. So now everything is, I am now confident. I am now powerful. And I take another drink. And I was able to walk right over to that girl and look her in the eyes and get her phone number. I found something that day. She even kissed me goodbye. My disease learned something that day. My disease told me that without the drink, I'm the ugly little monkey. But when I drink, I am now powerful. I am now the man. So my disease grew. It told me a lie that I believed for many years, that without a substance, I am less than. And with a substance, I am better than. So my disease took off the first time I used. I knew then that I was going to use for the rest of my life. I told myself that. I believed that I was going to use a substance for the rest of my life. So I became an owner of a company. I was doing construction. And I hired a guy. His name was Mr. B. He came from Belize, right off the boat, brand new to America. And he wanted a job, so I hired him. And the first day on the job, he said to me that, "You're only working to get high, aren't you?" "I'm only working to get high." That pissed me off, because he only knew me for one day, and he was able to wrap up my whole life in one sentence. I was only working to get high. He was right. And that pissed me off. I could have fired him. You know, I had put together a front or a facade. I put together a picture how I wanted people to see me. You see, I was a business owner. I cashed everyone's checks on Friday. You know, I had a credit card with all the money on it. I had an office with a secretary. I had three company trucks. I had like nine people working for me. I wanted you to see that I was a responsible member of society. I did not want you to know that I was getting high. And this guy named Mr. B, his first day he met me, he told me I was only working to get high. Do you know what an addict does when an addict gets mad? I'll tell you what I did. I got high. That's what addicts do when they get mad. I'll show you. I'll use. And that's what I did. And my life became very unmanageable. Very unmanageable. I made some very bad decisions, and I wound up in the streets. I had to give up the company. I lost the company. I gave the company away. Because I couldn't remain responsible. I had to use. So a part of my story is also being homeless. Being homeless, I started to do illegal things. Like I started to steal cars, and I started to rob businesses. And I became that guy that you would watch on the movies that would push around a shopping cart in the streets picking up garbage. That was me. That's what That's what this disease led me to do, you know. So it was humiliating. It was very humiliating. It was very painful, and it was very scary. And I tried to hide all those feelings with drugs. I continued to use. Using now in my life became more important than anything else. You know, using was more important than eating food. You know, I used to eat food out of the dumpster of McDonald's. The McDonald's dumpster in Brooklyn, New York, I would eat food out of the garbage dumpster. You know, and I would still have money in my pocket, but I couldn't spend that money on food because the money had to go to drugs. I'm not going to mention my drug of choice. My drug of choice is not important. All you need to know is that my drug of choice is more of whatever you got. That's my drug of choice, more. I have to have more when I get high, when I use drugs. So what kind of drugs? That's not important. That just separates us. So, you know, I need to remember where I come from. Our basic text, you know, talks about that. Our basic text talks about that those who forget are doomed to repeat. And I don't want to go back to where I came from. And I definitely don't want to forget my story. I don't want to forget when I was on my knees in an abandoned building with a man's penis in my mouth just to get high. Okay? I don't want to forget that. And I'm not gay. Okay? If you're gay, that's your business. I'm not gay. And I did whatever it took to get high. Okay? I didn't care anymore. So, I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in 1986, and I was not ready. I was not done. When I walked into that meeting, there was smoke in the air because everybody was smoking cigarettes, and I couldn't even see the table from the door. You know, I finally walked up to the table, and everybody smelled like coffee. And everybody, it was a bunch of fat old guys. They were all fat men with big noses, and they didn't have any teeth, and they had no hair. And all these fat guys were talking about this disease. They all talked about a disease. And they tried to give me a hug at my first meeting to welcome me. And I said, oh, fuck no, I don't want none of that shit. They look diseased. So I left. I did not want nothing to do with that meeting. And what's powerful about my experience is 9 years later, of coming in and out of the rooms for 9 years, the same men were in that meeting smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and talking about this disease. And to me, that was powerful that the same people were there. And I finally got my hug. I got a hug. On November 1st of 1995, and I haven't found it necessary to use drugs since. I've been clean 26 years and 27 or 28 days. So I am grateful that I finally, you know, accepted that hug and opened my mind to something new, you know. And now I'm going to share about the steps, and then, you know, that's all I have is my experience, you know. The steps are the solution. The steps are the solution to my life. The steps help me change my perception on life. They don't change life. Sometimes life sucks. Sometimes life is painful, and sometimes life kicks me in the ass. But with the steps in my life, I'm able to cope with life. My coping skills get better. My perception gets better. Life doesn't get better. My perception on life gets better. So I don't have a reason to get high. There is no reason to get high anymore. The only reason why an addict gets high is because they want to get high. Okay? That's out of our basic text. That's the only reason why an addict uses drugs, is because they want to, because they choose to, not because their grandmother died, not because the dog got hit by the car, not because I got fired from a job, or because my significant other left me. Oh, my girlfriend left me. Oh, my God, I got to get high. No, those are all excuses to get high. The reason why an addict gets high is because they want to. And when I was told that, I was told I never ever have to use again. I never have to use again. I have a choice today. When I'm using drugs, I have no choice. I'm powerless. That's our first step. Powerless. You know, today I'm clean. I have a choice today. I have power. I don't have to use today. I don't have to use against my will. I don't have to make my life more unmanageable with drugs. You know, so let's share where I'm at. I recently I had to bury my grandmother a couple years ago at this time. My grandmother was a big part of my life. I went to Germany with my grandmother to the Oktoberfest, and I went to Salzburg, Austria to visit her family. My mother's German and my father's Italian. So I visited my mother's side of the family back in like 91 or 92, and then I or 89, and then I visited my father's side of the family in Sicily. So I've been to Europe a couple of times, and I'm grateful for that experience. But my grandmother was really close to me. I love my grandmother, and every Thanksgiving, you know, that's one of the holidays we celebrate over here in the States. So every Thanksgiving, my grandmother would cook, and I would help her cook. And every Christmas, she would always give me the Christmas lights to fix. Every year, I had to fix Christmas lights. And that was where me and my grandmother, we bonded, because we both liked that time of the year, this time of the year. So when she passed away, I found myself at the funeral, and my mother and my mother's sister, my aunt, they were fighting with each other at my grandmother's funeral. They were fighting over my grandmother's stuff, over all her property. And it was disgusting. I was embarrassed to be around my mother and to be around my aunt. And I got really mad, and I left the funeral, and I was in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I went to a meeting. I was thinking about getting high. I was that mad. I was thinking about getting high. So I went to a meeting, and a woman at the meeting told me to look for the solution in the steps, and you'll see the sign. That's what she told me. So while I was driving back to my mother's house, I seen a sign on the road. It was a KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's a fast food restaurant. They had a sign that said they would deep fry a turkey for $20. So I ran to the grocery store. I brought a turkey and brought it to my mom's house, and I cooked some vegetables, and I made Thanksgiving dinner. The reason why I did that was because at the funeral, my mother and my grandmother were saying that they would never have Thanksgiving and Christmas again because my grandmother passed away around the holidays. And every time the holidays will come, we'll think of our grandmother, and we won't be happy. We'll be depressed. So they said we're never going to have Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner again. And that did not sit right with me. So I went and I made Thanksgiving dinner, and I lied to everybody. I call it spiritually lying. I lied to my family to get them to my mom's house so we could all have dinner together. And when my mother and my grandmother showed up at the house, they were like, "What is this?" I said, "It's dinner. It's Thanksgiving dinner. And we're going to eat as a family. Because that's what our grandmother would have wanted us to do. Okay? Fuck you." That's what I told my mother. "You sit down and eat, because grandma is here with us right now. She is here in spirit. And that's not me." You see, I give that credit to Narcotics Anonymous, because I run away. I'm a runner. I run away from confrontation. I run away from feelings. But something about the way they made me feel did not make me, it didn't sit right with me. And I've been clean a while. So I have some spiritual principles in my life. And I truly believe that I owe Narcotics Anonymous that credit for changing me, for making me a pillar of my family. I'm not that piece of dirt anymore in my family. I'm a responsible member of my family, a responsible member of society. How much time do I got left, Miley? Am I good? Or should I wrap it up? Just keep going? All right, I got one more story, Miley. One more story. So my grandmother's dream. All right, 10 minutes. Thank you, Nikolai. So my grandmother's dream was for her to buy a log cabin. And when my grandmother passed away, she never was able to get a log cabin. So I brought this log cabin. I built it. And I bought a piece of land. And I put my cabin on my land. And then I also put another home on another piece of land. And I was going to rent it out. I was going to, you know, I was going to make money getting rent from somebody living in my home. At the same time as I did that, my mother was losing her home in Virginia. So my sister called me up and she said, Harry, Mom's about to lose her home. Let's put her in your home. And I was like, I don't want Mom in my home. I want rent. You know, I brought that home so I can collect rent. I want the money. And my sister said, it's not about the money. It's about taking care of your mother. So I did it, but I was mad. I was resentful that I wasn't getting rent because I made an investment and I wanted that money back. So 3 years ago, I turned 50 years old. And my mother called me up and she said, come over to the house. I got something for you. So I go to the house and my mother gives me this charm. I wear it every day of my life. It's a Mother Mary charm. And I know Mother Mary is a Catholic icon, and I know that's a religious thing. This is a spiritual program, not a religious program. So I'm only telling my story. So if that offends anybody, call your sponsor because I'm sharing my story. So my mother gives me this medallion, and I wanted to wear this medallion my whole life, and she would never let me wear it. She would never let me wear it because I was either going to sell it or I was going to lose it. And I really wanted to wear it because it was blessed by the Pope in 1978. So my mother gives me this charm, and she tells me that Harry, I want you to have the charm now. You've been clean a long time, and you're 50 years old. I believe you're responsible enough to wear this charm. And she says, the Mother Mary took care of me, Harry, my whole life. And now I don't need her anymore to take care of me. I was kind of like, what are you talking about, Mom? What do you mean she's not taking care of you? Of course she's taking care of you. And my mother says, I don't need her to take care of me no more because now my son takes care of me. You see, I didn't sign up for this shit. All I wanted to do was get high when I got here. I didn't want to be clean. I just wanted to get high. And Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to lose the obsession to get high, to lose the obsession to use. Narcotics Anonymous taught me that by working steps. I didn't expect one day that I'd be taking care of my mother. That wasn't my plan. My plan was to get high until I die. And Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life. Not only do I take care of my own responsibilities, now I'm also the responsibility for other people. I'm responsible for my mother. I keep my mother in a home. I don't get no money. She don't pay me no money. She stays there for free. In fact, sometimes I pay her just to stay away from me because she's at my house every day. I'm like, Mom, here's some money. Go somewhere. Go spend it just to leave me alone. I see her too much. She's like my best friend. You know, I did not expect that from Narcotics, from where I come from. Narcotics Anonymous gave me my mother as my best friend. And my son, I have a son. He has a daughter that he's not taking care of. My son is out there. He's getting high and he's being irresponsible. So I take care of his daughter and my mother takes care of his daughter. She's only 3 years old. Little Mia is now part of my life. Now I take care of Mia. I didn't realize that I could be that person. I always see myself as irresponsible. I always see myself as that ugly little monkey. I never seen myself as a responsible, productive member of society. Takes care of the whole family. I've never seen myself in that light, you know, until Narcotics Anonymous, until I had my spiritual awakening. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has awakened my spirit. So I'm kind of in a little bit of pain. So I'm gonna wrap it up. Thank you, Miley, for asking me to share. You know, I'm not gonna tell everybody, you know, if nobody's told you they love you, I love you. I'm not gonna say that. You know, if you want that, you know, keep coming back. You know what I'm saying? You know what? Try working the steps and you won't need somebody to tell you they love you because you'll love yourself. And that's where I'm at today. I can look in the mirror today and I can be proud of what I see in that mirror. So, you know, I got the tools today to live with this disease or I can die from it. So I hope I talked slow enough for you, Miley, so you could understand and hope everyone else understands. You know, my sponsor tells me that I'm going to go far in Narcotics Anonymous because I still have so far to go. 26 years clean don't mean shit to this disease. This disease does not respect my clean time. Okay, I can get high today. I can go out and use today. But because of the help of you people, I'm clean. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I'm connected. I'm grateful that I never have to use again. You know, I'm grateful that I don't try to fight this disease by myself. That I allow you people into my life and to help me and to guide me in my recovery. That's all I got, man. Peace.